The Fan on Demand. On and off the ice, it's all on the air. Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
These are the days we're here. React to what happened last night in the National Hockey League, a drilling by the Chicago Blackhawks of the President's Trophy-winning Vancouver Canucks. A statement saying, we're still here. And one of the biggest comebacks in playoff history. The San Jose Sharks down 4-0 in the second period on the road and beat the Los Angeles Kings. How does it happen? Plus, the NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman joins us on Hockey Central at noon discussing primarily the status of the Phoenix Coyotes, who play tonight to try and extend their season, perhaps trying to put off the extinction of the franchise in Arizona. Darren Millar, Nick Kyprios, and Doug McClain. You guys want to start with the Vancouver Canucks? Going for the sweep of the Chicago Blackhawks. They always say that that's going to be the toughest game, but did you expect Vancouver to lose by 5, Luongo being chased, the Sedins dominated? And all of that without Brent Seabrook?
No, I didn't. I picked Chicago to win last night in our prediction pool, but I did it with some hesitancy. Boland effect. I mean, hey, 4 points. I thought he would help them depth-wise up front because they are so thin after their top five or so. Frolik moves to the wing and gave them a great performance. That line was terrific for them. Making up for the loss of Seabrook was really surprising. Campoli logged ice, Letty logged ice. Obviously, with the score, they were able to rest the Keith and Campbells, although they're both over 23, 24 minutes. So I was surprised that they played so well, but they're talented. They're that good.
Losing isn't the issue here because I don't think anybody really thought that there'd be a sweep. We thought Vancouver would win the series, and we still do. So losing isn't the issue here.
But you say a loss?
How they lost.
Oh.
No, how they lost. And I did not like it at all. I didn't like it at all just to watch that whole team lay a goose egg like that. I think they maybe salvaged a little bit of some team character at the end. And say what you will, call them sore losers, but I like sore losers this time of year. I don't like quiet losers.
I'll tell you what I like the last couple of days.
It's not a good sign for the first place team in the National Hockey League, the President's Trophy winners, to get their asses kicked like they have in the past against Chicago is not, to me, a good sign for Vancouver.
I like the way Taves handled himself the last couple of days. He was really ticked off at his group, at the team. You know, he called out the Canucks a little bit, then he sort of backed up, but he stayed strong. I mean, I think he's one of the best, I guess that's an understatement, one of the best leaders in the game. I thought he really showed some true colors here the last couple of days.
But in a quiet way, in a reserved way.
In a reserved way, but I think the guys in that dressing room got the message, and the guy that needed to get the message, in my opinion, more than anybody, was Kane. I mean, this guy is a star. He wants to be a star. He was a star. You know, he's been a star since forever, and he needed a kick in the ass, this kid. And you know what? He came through last night with a couple of big points and a couple of great plays. And if Kane's not going, making his plays in the offensive zone and gaining the blue line as effectively as he can gain the blue line because of his puck sense, his puck vision, his patience, they're a different team when Kane's going, and he needed to be jump-started.
You say Kane, I say Hossa.
Yeah, well,
I say Hossa.
And he still isn't going.
He's a little better, but that's the guy that it could be dangerous for Vancouver if he gets going.
That's the scary part. They all left the game last night
feeling like they're going to turn it around.
Feeling like they got a chance.
They're going to get their game going.
And you and I know if Chicago win in Vancouver, which is a tough task, it goes 7.
But they've had success in Vancouver.
Yeah, but
the first two games of the
series
aside,
this is a different team, though. This is a different Vancouver team. They're better.
Me, X factors will be Hossa and Sharp. And Sharp's been up. He was out the last little while. Sharp looked like he was. He didn't miss a beat from winning the cup last year. And there's another dangerous guy. And these guys, Bolin and Sharp, just know how to win. They fall in that category that that's Scott Niedermeyer, you know, Corey Perry, that no matter where they go, they just win. Mike Richards, they know how to win.
Seabrook, I haven't heard any updates on Seabrook. I mean, can he come back and play? If he sat out last night, that would indicate he's got a concussion. Would it not? Would it indicate he's got a concussion?
Yes. So well, they're not calling it a concussion. It's an upper body injury.
Right, I know. But if in fact he does have a concussion, is there any chance he plays in the next game? That's really important.
And then we open up a whole new can of worms, right?
Right.
Now we start sitting there and second guessing Seabrook or the Blackhawks, the doctors, yeah,
and
the
I'm not second guessing anybody. I'm just wondering, can he come back that quick from it?
But it's not whether he comes back.
After three of them,
you're putting him in a scenario where he takes another whack.
You are.
And it's been Wisniewski, it's been Abdicator, it's been
and usually
Torres.
The protocol is that you should give him a week, 7 days.
Well,
I think that's
typically
what they like. But
who knows?
We know in the playoffs it's a different beast.
Unless it's not a concussion, unless it's just a concussion-like symptoms, which we've heard a lot this year.
Under the radar.
Whiplash.
In the series.
A strained neck.
Roberto Luongo has been dominant. Even in the first period last night, he was very good. Twisted his arm around.
And
Mac, you illustrated last night that he was so good in the first period, made a couple of glove saves, then twisted his shoulder, and the first two goals were high glove last night.
Yeah, they were. I mean, let's not kid ourselves.
The second and third goal.
The Keith one was a blast. I don't know if he ever, but you know what? He's been making those saves. He's been that good that he's been making those saves. The Bolin goal in the high slot. You know, I don't think he's hurt.
The Bickle goal, the first one wasn't good.
No, but the question is, we questioned why he came out in the third. Is there any chance that he, and we all agreed that we wouldn't have put him back in there in the third.
5-1.
But the question is, did he put him back in because he wanted to dispel any rumors that he's injured? Is that why he may have brought him back in and let him start? Because, we're not going to
have... Let me ask you.
We saw him coming off, hunched over.
If you're a coach, would you ever, ever even consider that a thought, coaching?
That if he's hurt?
That you needed to dispel any notion or any idea? I can't even believe that would even enter your mind as a coach.
With the way the Blackhawks' history has been, the way they've gone to the paint and bothered this guy, and if they sense there's a slight injury there... I don't know. Maybe I'm making a mountain. And obviously, I don't think he's hurt or he wouldn't have gone back
in. Don't dismiss the possibility that Roberto Luongo was consulted with the coaching staff, and he said, I'm going back out there.
Because that's the way he is even during the regular season.
Because he's been chased.
When Schneider plays, he wants to be in there.
It's not.
Because he's on a mission to dispel all this notion that he can't perform under pressure.
Sixth time.
And he's done it so far, except last night.
Sixth time in 16 playoff games against Chicago that he's allowed 5 or more goals.
Yeah. But he's different this year, don't you? I mean, he looks like a different goaltender. To me, he does. He looks confident, comfortable. His demeanor after the game was, hey, I'm seeing the puck really well.
If there's such a thing of letting in 6 better goals than he has in the past... Or 5 or more.
Yeah.
He still looked better giving up 5 or more last night than he has in the past, if that makes any sense.
I never thought of it that way.
In no other game, Bickle scores that goal on him.
That was a hell of a move, though.
It was a great move, but I you don't beat Luongo like that after beat two defensemen.
But he needed to be more aggressive on that one, and I thought even the Frolik breakaway, great move, coming a 1,000 miles an hour, but... Yeah. You got to be a little bit more aggressive than that.
What do you make of this?
Spit it out.
Are you going to ask a question?
Spit it out.
What?
No. The scenario that David Boland owns the Sedins.
He does.
Yeah, I don't.
He did last year.
Well, for the first 3 games, Vancouver won. They were close games. They were 2-1 goal games.
The Sedins had nothing. The Sedins had no points in the first game, although they did have a lot of chances.
But then last night in game 4, David Bolin returns. not only do the does David Bullen put up points, but they take advantage of the Sedins.
They were minus seven before they scored that late goal, minus seven. And they played pretty much the whole game in their own zone. And
they were invisible.
Yeah, they were invisible. And that's not a good sign.
You don't
honestly,
see.
That's not a great sign that two star players like that can absolutely disappear for the duration of the game.
Not just invisible.
You don't see that very often in the playoffs where two of the best players in the world.
They might be snake bitten a little bit, but they don't disappear.
Really?
I would go
and you could say that about Kane. That I don't think he necessarily disappeared, but in Vancouver those first two games, they pushed Luongo.
But he's 20. He's 23, and they're 30 or 30 plus. Are they 30?
31, I think.
So you know you're
not good with numbers anyway.
No, but they're over. They're 30 plus.
You never work
at a circus.
Kane
is an 80. Kane is an 87 born. How do you like that?
You were doing some math on the fly last night. It was pretty funny. It was good.
Yeah.
Corey Crawford, by the way, picks up his first playoff victory.
But not the puck.
But not the puck.
No, didn't get the puck.
But didn't get the puck.
I think it was Christian Ehrhoff jumped off the boards and took the puck.
No one
Ehrhoff. Like Chris Pronger did a year ago.
No one Ehrhoff like you do, he will apologize and give it back to him. Pronger would
in pieces.
Pronger would throw it at him.
At the end of the series, when they're shaking hands, hopefully when Vancouver wins, they'll slide him the puck.
It was either Ham Hughes or Ehrhoff, but we think with our CSI technology, it was Ehrhoff that
grabbed
the puck.
And he would give it back to him and apologize.
We've got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes here. Just a comment on what San Jose did in rallying back last night against the LA Kings. I don't know how it happens in the National Hockey League that with a third of the game gone and a team up 4-0, you can end up losing the game.
I would say one thing. When you're up 4-0, you've got to count on your big-time stoppers to stop the puck or stop the flow. And where was Hanzus last night?
He scored.
Worst defensive performance of the playoffs. Those are the guys that have got to come through. Smith, the veterans, because they're a young group.
Did you see him on the overtime goal? Marlowe went through him like a hot knife through butter.
Exactly.
And on a 3-on-2, you give up a 3-on-2 in the neutral zone.
And he's Terry Murray's best defensive player.
Missing your check.
So those are the guys that you're vet, because they are a young group. They're a young, excitable group. They're going to give up leads, but that was a meltdown.
Terry's losing it today. 4-0.
San Jose is a pretty good team.
You could make the argument LA should be up 3-0 in this series.
Well,
they've lost two games in overtime.
They should be up 2-1.
And they won the other game handily. They scored at one point during the set, they've scored 8 straight goals. Mm-hmm. And they're trailing the series 2-1.
Yeah, it was bizarre. And of course,
Pavelski, they got some guy. They got some big time players too, San Jose.
And outside Pavelski of the caused a couple, the, one of the early obvious goals on a back check.
You know,
they had to pull Niemi. It's nice when you pull your guy that's got you there. And as a guy that Niemi's one of the guys that turned their season around.
Yeah, but he's been bad in the series.
Right. Four on 10.
And when you pull
him. It was something ridiculous last night.
You pull him and you win. You know, pull him and you win.
What are these three names?
Where
mean
do they
to
go
you?
Now? Nidamaki?
No.
No, they got to go back.
They stay.
Really? They got to go
Nidamaki
back.
Nidamaki won the game for them.
They got to go back. They got to go back to Niemi. I agree.
Little name association for you as we go to break. Steve Yzerman, Mike Gillis, David Poile.
General manager.
Yes.
General manager of the years.
They are the finalists.
Fans will be excited to get that information.
Serious. That's a trophy.
David Poile, Steve Yzerman, and who's the third?
Mike Gillis.
That's good. Good. Hey, three excellent choices.
Next week we'll announce the trainers of the year.
No. But give credit. I mean, these three guys deserve that honor. They've all three of them have done a great job.
We got Bettman coming up. I want to make
something. We have Mr. Bettman coming up.
I want something crystal clear, okay? It's not an opportunity for you to sniff out a job.
I don't want a job. I've got the best job in hockey.
Hard-nosed journalism at its finest. We're going to ask hard-nosed questions.
This is the best job in hockey right
it's
here.
Not a little love fest.
The pay leaves a little bit to be desired, but it's a hell of a job.
You're sniffing out a job. I know that.
Gary would love this job when he decides to step down.
You're allowed to call him Gary, but we have to call him Mr. Bettman?
Well, every time I say
Are
Mr.
you as tight with Gary and the NBC guy, Dick Embersole?
Every time I say, how you doing, Mr. Bettman, he says, it's Gary to you, Doug.
Oh, and have you guys done your lunch yet?
The commissioner is coming up.
Dinner in Florida.
Dinner.
The status of the Phoenix Coyotes. Is this the last game? Gary Bettman on Hockey Central.
Don't go there.
Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. We're going there.
Now more Hockey Central at noon. Simulcast on Sirius Channel 97 on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Hockey Central Studio, Darren Millard, along with Nick Kyprios and Doug McClain on a five-game night in the National Hockey League Stanley Cup playoffs. The opening round continues with the Rangers trying to draw even with the Capitals, Penguins in Tampa Bay, Ducks aiming for a 2-2 series with the Nashville Predators. Predators have never won three games in a set. Sabres at home to Philadelphia and the Detroit Red Wings up against the Phoenix Coyotes.
I hate when I'm on hold with a radio station and the host just rambles on about a bunch of stuff and kills our time.
The Red Wings taking on the Coyotes tonight, which could be the final game for the Coyotes at jobbing.com. Here is the commissioner of the National Hockey League. How are you, sir?
I'm okay. I agree with Doug. You sit on hold, people start talking about things that you want to weigh in on. It's good to be with you.
And we know how excited you are to join this show, because every time I run into you, say, Doug, try to get me on there more often.
I know.
That's in between dinners.
We've had that conversation repeatedly. It is good to be with you guys, and thank you for having
me. And you shouldn't be on hold, because you are a very busy guy. You got TV deals and your teams to look after.
But I have my own radio show, and I understand how that works, and you can't always help but put people on hold.
So, gut feeling, is this the last game for the Phoenix Coyotes?
You know, it's not really a fair question, and the speculation that we've been holding some announcement waiting for them to stop playing is absolutely wrong. We are still focused on trying to make it work in Phoenix. And I hope we're successful. That's what we've been working on. Obviously, when the Goldwater Institute killed the deal, it was a huge setback. Nobody expected them to do that. We didn't think it was right that they did it. But the focus is still on making it work.
Do we have an
infinite amount of time? The answer is obviously not. But we haven't been holding an announcement waiting to see when the Coyotes are done playing. I assure you of that.
But when you don't have enough time, you also have to cover yourself. And you guys have done that. You have done that. Can you confirm for us that you have been negotiating with the Chipman Group in Winnipeg?
No, I'm not going to either confirm or deny that. I think it would be fair to say that I don't have a deal for the club to go anywhere else right now. If I had to get to a deal at some point, my guess is I could probably arrange it. You would be terribly disappointed at us and the way this league runs if you know, you think we would just back ourselves into a corner and not have
a plan B.
Some options out there. But plan B has not been effectuated.
Gary, we've got a public forum coming up, which people have been trying to get to. What really does that mean, Goldwater and the city having a public forum? Does it really mean anything? And the other thing that concerns me here is Hulsizer, God bless him, he's been involved and he's gone through ropes here, but he hasn't even been to a playoff game, it's being reported. That doesn't seem to make sense to me. If I'm buying a team, I'm around.
Well, but I think part of the problem
is
part of the problem is there's been a lot of the media hysteria over this. I think he didn't want to be a distraction.
Okay.
You know, interestingly enough, the day of game one, there were all these reports that, you know, there's a deal, there's an announcement. None of the reports were true, and I think he's probably been respectful and judicious in terms of how he's been approaching this, because none of us want there to be a distraction. We want the players to have every opportunity to focus on what takes place on the ice, and we really want the fans to be able to enjoy the experience. So I wouldn't read too much into it. You know, the fact is he may have other things going on. People may have wondered why I wasn't at games the last 3 or 4 days, although I was at a game on Sunday. You know, sometimes you get caught up doing other things and you don't have the luxury of getting to a game, particularly if it's one you have to travel for.
Is there a timeline? Is there a deadline? Or is it weeks? Is it months? I mean, how long can this go on? It's been 2 years.
You are, well, the fact that it's been 2 years is irrelevant. The first year we were there with the club coming out of bankruptcy, and
right.
this year we stayed put because the city of Glendale asked us to and was prepared to finance any losses this year. So all this speculation that it's been a long time and we've spent lots and lots of money, it's not true.
But let me finish.
Yeah. So the question is, obviously, at the point we issue a schedule for next season, we're going to have to know where the team is playing. So, you know, you can back it up from there some point because we don't do the schedule in 24 hours, but we have some flexibility. And frankly, I don't think setting a deadline right now would serve any useful or constructive purpose. And quite frankly, I'm not operating under a deadline right now.
Hey, Gary, Goldwater Institute says that you guys – along with Hulsizer, are trying to pull an illegal deal, that you're taking public money and putting it into the private sector. My question to you is that, did you guys... your response to that?
Well, first of all, what they're saying is that they believe it violates the gift clause. And it doesn't mean you can't give money to the private sector. The gift clause is an Arizona law. It means that you just can't give money that doesn't have a commensurate value or benefit coming back. And it's well chronicled that Arizona and many of the municipalities have given money to the U.S. Airways Arena where the Phoenix Suns play, Chase Stadium, I think it's called, where the Diamondbacks play, to countless number of spring training camps for baseball teams. In fact, and what I'm reciting to you is what Senator John McCain told me as recently as the last 48 hours. There's even been an energy company that was deciding whether or not to relocate or locate in Texas versus Arizona, and there some municipality gave them lots of incentives. What this comes down to is the Goldwater Institute, which is a watchdog private entity, has decided that they don't like the deal the city of Glendale has made. They're not accountable to anyone but their contributors, and they don't like that deal, and they want to substitute their judgment for the city council of Glendale. And what's interesting about it is all they've done is threaten. And it is the threat that there may be a lawsuit that made the bonds unsaleable, because if you're in the business of buying bonds and there are thousands of different bonds you can buy from hundreds of different municipalities, you'd say to yourself, well, if my job depends on me investing correctly, why would I buy a bond where there may be a lawsuit and the bond may be threatened? And it is that threat which they haven't proved on that they're right. And if the deal collapses, they may never have to prove on they were right unless somebody sues them for some sort of interference notion. But that's what caused the deal to go sideways. And what the city of Glendale has been doing with our help and with Matt Hulsizer is trying to figure out another way to do this where it doesn't involve having to sell the bonds in a way that the Goldwater Institute can interfere.
Do you think that you can find another way here, or are you going to run out of time?
Well, I mean, it's more a question of logistics than time, and that's something that everybody has been working on, and that's why the focus continues to be on making this work in Phoenix. You know, again, I guess it's because the Coyotes are playing. This seemed to be the story du jour when, you know, they're exciting hockey being played. We got great series. We got 5 games tonight. We had an incredible come-from-behind victory last night. You know, that to me is more relevant. Whether or not we have a deadline or the Coyotes are staying or going, that's pure speculation by anyone right now.
But it's more than speculation.
Including me.
Gary, but it's a little bit more speculation. You know, you can't blame us for talking about the fact that you've been negotiating with Winnipeg to bring hockey if in case you need to go to Plan B. That's a pretty big story 2 days before the playoffs are about to start.
You're assuming I've been doing that.
Yes.
And I haven't.
We know you've been doing that.
Tonight. You don't know anything. The person that
you won't deny it.
You can guess. You may say you have sources, but you don't know.
But you won't deny it either.
I'm not going to confirm it either because I've never gotten into discussions about what we're doing. Quite frankly, and I've been consistent on this, when I have something to definitive to announce, I'll announce it. And part of this is I don't want anybody's expectations getting raised. It's not really fair, and I don't want people's expectations to be deflated in one place and raised in another when it may be completely wrong in both places. I don't blame you for covering the story, but guys, enough is enough already. Yeah. This isn't the biggest thing going on.
Oh, no, in Canada it's pretty big, Gary. Gary, it's pretty darn big story in Canada, potentially bringing a seventh team to Canada.
It's a big story if the team ultimately moves. The fact that people are speculating that it might move and the amount of attention that speculation got, I understand that it's a story, but it isn't as big as people are trying to make it. And again, it's not fair to the people of Winnipeg, and it's not fair to the people in Arizona.
NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman on with Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, and Doug McClain on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590, and the Hockey Central studio.
Gary, let's just, I want to get into talking a little bit about the TV deal, but first, let's just touch on the Rafi Torres hit. I listened to Coley last night. I don't know how he's doing it right now with the frustration and the challenges that he's faced with. What are your thoughts on the recent conversations about the Rafi Torres hit from behind the net? I mean, the blindside hit doesn't affect the behind the net play, but
It has nothing to do with behind the net play, and somehow this term, the hitting zone, has come into the vocabulary for some reason. Nobody's defined a hitting or a no hit zone.
No,
if you talk,
but they said blindside hits do not apply behind the net, is what was actually said.
No, that's not true. Blindside hits are blindside hits if they're hits to the head. And if you talk to Coley or you talk to Brendan Shanahan or you talk to Rob Blake and you talk to Mike Murphy, none of them believe that this was a blindside hit to the head. Okay, now people may dispute it and people may disagree, but the people that I rely on, including two guys who recently came off the ice from Hall of Fame careers, their view is, while we may not like this hit, and we may decide at some point to legislate that type of hit out of the game, the fact is that wasn't a hit under Rule 48.
No.
And people may disagree with that, but that's their opinion, and I have confidence in their judgment.
Did you think it was a suspendable hit when you first saw it?
When I first saw it quickly, I said it might be. And then when I had the benefit of slowing it down and looking at it and talking to everybody, the view is to go, I don't love that hit, but it isn't the blindside hit to the head. It's
Coley came on the air the other day on, I think, McCowan's show, and there was a sense of frustration. Are you frustrated at all? You sound pretty crystal clear on how you stand and the direction this whole thing continues to go.
What I think I'm frustrated about is, we're in an evolutionary period. We have been, as everybody knows, our desire to focus on and deal with concussions goes back to 1997. We have been more proactive than any other sports league. And I'm not looking for credit for that. I'm trying to set the table to let everybody know that we know this is important. And we started last year to focus on hits that may be not any longer appropriate in our game. And so when we passed Rule 48 to address blindside and lateral hits to the head, what then happened was the commentary as the game is going on for a big hit where the head may have been involved is, uh-oh, that's a suspension. The rule is very specific. It wasn't intended to be an overbroad blanket no-head hit rule because we know there are problems with doing that if we want to keep the game physical and we want to keep hitting in the game. And so I think people need to be a little patient as we work our way through it. Not unlike perhaps when we came back from the work stoppage and we made a lot of rule changes and people had to get comfortable with understanding how the game was being played and what was and wasn't legal. And I think we're going through that kind of evolutionary period, but I think everybody needs to take a deep breath and look at what goes on carefully, analytically. There are, as you guys know, nuanced differences between similar acts that take place on the ice, and what we don't do is we don't make it up as we go along. Even if there's a hit we don't like, even if it's a player who's got a reputation, the fact of the matter is if the rules don't make it illegal, he doesn't get punished, even if we don't like the hit. If we don't like the hit that much, then we got to change the rule.
I watch lots of games every night, and I see a ton of games with a ton of physical play without shots to the head. This myth that we're going to change our game because we take headshots out, I don't know where that comes from, because I watch a ton of games like you do, Gary, without headshots, and I see more physical play than I've ever seen in the game.
Right, which is why we have
so
to be
taking headshots out is minimal
exactly,
to me.
Well, stop. That's my exact point. That's why we don't want to be over-legislating. Okay, we're getting to the right place. You've just said it. We watch a ton of games, yeah. And there isn't a lot of physical play involving the head. And that's exactly the point. So now, do you want us to put in a blanket headshot rule?
Yes,
which will
I do. No.
Well, but first of all, the increase in concussions is not coming from headshots. It's coming from other things. It's coming from collisions. It's coming from guys falling and banging their heads on the boards and glass. It's from pucks to the head.
So if you cut a third of head injuries down, okay. That's a positive.
By the way,
Gary.
Guys, you have me 3-on-1. At least let me talk.
Yeah,
okay?
Sorry.
The fact of the matter is, the game doesn't have a lot of headshots, and the headshots we have get a ton of attention. But because we don't, as you said, Doug, have a lot of headshots, that's why we have to be careful not to over-legislate, and what we need to do needs to be very precise.
Okay, quickly, before we let you go, one more. The 10-year, $2 billion deal. Why lock in for 10 years, Gary? If the league explodes in 5 or 7, it's gonna look minimal 10 years from now.
You know what? For anyone to suggest that a $2 billion deal for NHL TV in the U.S. is minimal is kind of silly, guys. Listen, if this turns out to be a good deal, we did great. But more importantly, the marketplace for national rights for all sports properties is now one that is dealing in long-term deals.
Nobody, from
a media standpoint, nobody's offering or making short-term
Have they got
deals.
Lockout or strike insurance? NBC?
Strike insurance?
Well, are there guarantees? Are there revisions in the deal that if there's a lockout that they don't pay?
We get paid in accordance with the terms of the contract on a regular basis.
Gary, I know one thing.
If we lose a season, we have to make good on it. Nobody's going to pay us for nothing.
Gary, I'll just tell you one thing. If I was president of the Columbus Blue Jackets today, yeah. I would be pretty excited about $6.6 million coming in from a national TV deal. So congratulations on that deal.
That's his way of asking you for a job, by the way.
No, it isn't. I don't want a job.
You got anything for him in the office?
Congratulations on the deal.
Thank you. And I think in the feedback we've been getting from most quarters is for the point that we find our game and the business of our game in the United States, this was another indication of how the game is growing and how strong our product is.
Well, you took a lot there. Thanks for soaking it up for us. I know Coyote fans are going to be looking around tonight wondering whether it's the last game, but we'll wait with great interest to see whether or not you guys...
And the answer to that is we're nowhere close to making an announcement.
And I look forward to the headshot rule. Thank you.
I look forward to you getting Doug a job.
People have this extensive wish list.
Oh, we're only getting
don't
started.
Don't worry about my job. I don't need one.
Thank you, Mr. Bettman.
Thanks, Gary.
Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the National Hockey League, will respond to what he had to say as well as tee up those 5 games tonight. Hockey Central at noon with the commissioner of the National Hockey League on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Make your friends weep with envy. Win wicked prizes inside the Fan Club. Join today at fan590.com. Now more Hockey Central at noon. Simulcast on Sirius Channel 97 on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
And then it was just us. Millard, McLean, and Kyprios back on Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590, Sirius Channel 97.
I get that he wants to downplay it. Obviously, again, he's sensitive to Phoenix.
If you're just joining us,
Winnipeg.
Nick Kyprios, just following up on a conversation we just had with Commissioner Gary Bettman and the discussion regarding the future of the Phoenix Coyotes moving to Winnipeg.
But he has to understand that getting another team in Canada would be a monumental story in this country.
Yeah, and he also we have to understand where they're coming from, and that there's a team playing, and they play again tonight. And you know.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with us doing our job.
No, exactly, but it's got lots to do with how the league handles it.
No, for sure.
And what they say.
And that's why he's downplaying it. Yeah, and
sure,
I
he's got
that.
To.
And as a player, as an ex-player, I am sensitive to that. But that can't stop us or anyone else from you know, reporting what's out there.
And you know what else? With the way he's got some things to go his way the last few years and survival situations that nobody expected.
He may pull another rabbit out of his hat.
He may pull a rabbit out of the hat. I'm not, you know, I'm concerned because Hulsizer hasn't been anywhere around. You know, has he lost interest? Is he fed up? I'm rumblings he may be going somewhere that he'll move into another team. But listen, he's got to downplay it. And I thought he did a real good job.
They got to get to Goldwater and, you know, start bribing them. Just slip them something, you know, like $100.
He
here,
said one thing that was interesting.
Golf memberships.
We've got to look at another way of getting this deal done.
Yeah. The phrase,
that means somebody putting more money in.
The phrase that stuck out to me was, killed the deal. Goldwater killed the deal.
As it's structured.
Yeah.
As it's structured. The bond thing is
so
not going to fall.
So do you have time, then, to go back and create another
Mac,
deal?
Let me ask you
I
something.
Don't think, I think
let
it's got to be Hulsizer because nobody
else
is going
You as
there.
A president and the dynamics of moving a club, is it as simply as backing up a truck and getting your equipment out or... Like, besides the selling of the tickets, besides all of that, like, that can come. But, like, realistically, how long could you wait? Could you do it in July? Could you do it in August and be up and ready for October?
Well, the Coyotes were going to move to Hamilton in 2 weeks. I mean, the one advantage
you're not joking. That when you worked with Jim Balsley,
we had a relocation plan that was enormous to get this thing moved and up and playing within weeks. So, The advantage is there's a 15,000-seat building in operation that is ready to go. It's not a typical American League management team from a ticket and sales perspective and a corporate sales situation. They can amp it up. The first year would be really tough. The bigger issue is players. I mean, homes to sell, relocation of families. It's a monumental task, but if it happens in the next couple of weeks, he said July 1st because that's when the schedule comes out. So the schedule is going to be in the process in early June. This is a decision I suspect has got to be made by early June at the latest. Gary, and I wanted to say this to him in the interview, in Carolina at the All-Star deal there, he said at that time that time was running out in Phoenix. That was a comment he made. Time is running out. Time is of the essence.
See,
it is running out.
The one thing that I think, you know, may not help Gary or the league is that it's just crystal clear they don't want to go to Winnipeg. They don't. And
the governor, governors don't.
And if they end up there, it's going to feel somewhat tainted. You know what I mean? It's not open arms. It's not, it's just like, you know, you guys, he called it plan B. It's probably plan H or I, they're trying everything to protect this market.
Dave Schultz made some great comments today. This is the 12th largest TV market in the U.S. Guys, we were getting $1.7 million a year for our TV deal in Columbus, Ohio, our local TV deal. $1.7 million, plus we got the right to sell inventory that got us close to $3 million a year. You know, that's the challenge. You know, and what's Columbus, the 25th, 26th largest TV market in the U.S.? They're losing the 12th largest TV market. But if it's not working, it's not working.
Well,
it doesn't matter how big a TV market it is.
It's
what's
whether,
Atlanta?
Whether it's working or not is irrelevant. What's relevant is finding a sucker out there to come up with additional funds to get the deal done. It's about the deal. It's not about whether it's working or not anymore. They want to keep it there.
I mean,
they want to keep it there.
How hard is it to find guys that can write $30 million checks?
I'll say this. You know, there's a lot of things I haven't agreed over the years with Gary Bettman. I will never underestimate that guy.
No, nope, I
ever.
Won't either.
You said they don't want to go to Winnipeg, but is it more factual that they don't want Phoenix to go to Winnipeg? And maybe Atlanta
is
that
there's,
team?
There's moving chairs now, right? There's a carousel going, not just, obviously Phoenix is the focal point here, but Atlanta, Doug, you're hearing stuff on Dallas, and you can talk about it because they're not in the playoffs now. It won't affect them. but Dallas, St. Louis. I mean, there's some musical chairs going on in Gary Bettman's office
with Hulsizer.
With his franchises.
If Hulsizer, the one scenario, was it you that mentioned it last night? One scenario is if Hulsizer doesn't get Phoenix and that falls through, then he kicks tires on St. Louis. What's the scenario with Dallas?
You've got Dallas. You got last night it was reported that Gilardi, the Vancouver businessman, is heavily involved. He looks like he's the front runner. I was told a few days ago Cuban is heavily involved in trying to cut the deal. A businessman out of Detroit is interested in Dallas. So it looks like Dallas, the wheels are moving there. So, you know, there is some interested parties. The price point is a critical thing. Matt Hulsizer, seriously, guys, if you're buying the Phoenix Coyotes, and I understand the media pressure and didn't want to be around, come on. You're there, aren't you? I mean, this guy was on intermissions. This guy was around, and he's invisible in the playoffs. Anyway.
No, a spokesperson did come.
But you're right. I wouldn't underestimate Gary Bettman. What's the point of showing up if you believe that you're not getting the deal? Really? Right?
No, that's my point.
Yeah.
That's my whole point.
Yeah.
If you think you're getting the deal, you're there. And you're assuring people that it's going to get done. His spokesman came out last night and said they're still in line. But that's my point. You're assuring. If you're there, you're involved. But, hey, I think the point you made and Kipper made is don't underestimate Gary Bettman. He has pulled some things out of his cap, and let's see what happens. I think there's going to be a team in Winnipeg.
You say I say a little lower.
Yeah. Yeah.
5 games tonight, and we will acknowledge what Mr. Bettman suggested, and that there's some great series going on right now.
Sure is.
And Vancouver doesn't sweep Chicago.
And we didn't even get a chance. When I was in the NHL, it was $2.1 billion in revenue. $3 billion in revenue.
But what happens if it goes
tough? But in tough economic times.
And my point is over 10 years, say this game explodes and it goes to 4.5, 5, yeah, and you're
that happens.
You know?
But the bigger thing is, Kip, if it goes to $4 million and all of a sudden it's $75 million in that you can spend, where does that affect the small market teams? The teams we're talking about that can't afford today to get to spend $40 million on player payrolls,
and Winnipeg,
where does it go then?
Winnipeg would be one of those teams.
Yeah,
that would be considered a small market.
Way to leave us on a positive note there, Doug, saying that teams can't afford to play in their own league. Way to go, Doug.
What's
way
the cap if it goes to note. If it goes to $3.5 billion in revenues? What's the cap? 62 now.
Kipper, one in the hand, better than two in the bush. Rangers, Lightning, Predators, Sabres, all searching for series ties tonight.
Is the show over already? Should we go to 2 hours?
25 seconds.
No.
And the Red
Collins
Wings
can't afford, or Scott Moore, or Pelly. They can't afford for us to go to 2 hours.
The Red Wings ended.
For the grief they take.
The Red Wings ended the Jets franchise
in
Winnipeg.
What do you keep talking about?
Can they do it again tonight?
Greg Brady never did that.
Against the Phoenix Coyotes.
He knew when to
shut
up.
Oh, my goodness.
Talk to you tonight. Hockey Central Playoff Edition, 6 o'clock on Sportsnet.